Hello, my name is Robert Martiniano, Senior Program Manager at the Center for Health Workforce Studies at the University at Albany. When conducting a community needs assessment, one challenge is how to engage the community. To discuss community engagement, with me today are Thomas Rauner of Nebraska State Office of Rural Health and Linda Beers of the Essex County Health Department.
All right, so our first question is, how do you get the community engaged? Linda?
Is to start with a clear definition of what community is. So community, when you're a local health department in New York State, means county boundaries make my community. But when I work with partners in the hospital system, they probably transcend several counties. So it depends when you're defining community to right from the beginning, and then how to engage what community you're talking about. So I will speak from a health department point of view, how do I engage the people in my community, meaning the county in which I live? And so I think that I inform stakeholders through their involvement that their needs will be addressed. So it always goes back to me to what's in it for me. Why should I come to this meeting? Lots of people have meetings these days. So I like to say that if you come to this stakeholder meetings and you engage in this community forum, that we will address your needs, we will be heard, and we will try very diligently to see where the data falls that emphasizes that your need is at the highest or the lowest. And you'll leave there with a sense of understanding of what we can do together to accomplish change.
Okay. Tom, why don't you, answer the same question, and then I've got a follow-up for both of you.
No, I think the issue really when it comes down to, like I said, engaging the community, it is to, define and kind of work with that sites that you're trying to address. So I think the issue, again, what is the major concerns I see when it comes to engaging the community? I think at this point in time, it is a really big challenge because I think, trying to frame your discussion around this as saying what is the community. Being at the state level, I tend to look at the community as the state itself, and kind of where do we rank with any concerns or issues that we have within the state, and then being able to go ahead and take that down to the community level and say, where do you as a community rank with whatever the concern or problem is? At that point in time, I guess it's really up to the communities as far as engaging them. They've, in most cases, have gone ahead and decided what the issue or concern is, and when we're going out to talk to and engage folks in the community, it's already been something that generally has been identified as being a concern or an issue. So when you're bringing folks together, if, again, they don't see that as a concern or major issue, you're not likely to get them to attend. So a lot of it really is, more than anything else, probably trying to go ahead and promote as much as possible what is the concern or an issue that's going on, how does it affect you locally, and, you know, we need you to come and be able to share those thoughts and concerns with us.
Thank you. So you've actually both touched on something I want to explore a little more. You talked about how an issue may define a community and who you're bringing into the process. Can that differ issue to issue, who you define as a community? And Tom, why don't you start?
Yes, I think one of the bigger things that I see when it comes to defining the community, it really does revolve around the issue as far as what is the concern, what is the problem that we're trying to go ahead and address out there. So, again, depending on how narrowly that's defined, I think that's probably the biggest concern that one would have to try and, again, pinpoint who it is that you want to be able to address that. And, again, it can be a very broad group that you're trying to go out there and get. I think one of the biggest things that we try and do is, again, defining the concern or the issue is to then work with some of the folks locally at, for instance, like the local public health department level, and with those, and then branching out into the community and finding out who some of the community leaders that they've identified. So kind of using a key informant process to then say, who should be involved in your community, and then try and make sure we're assessing and getting those folks there around whatever that topic or issue is. Sorry, it's a little broad.
That's all right. Linda, do you have thoughts on that question?
Yeah. So I would say that really, so the same kind of thing in defining the goal, right? So a need can be defined as the gap between what is and what should be. And so what group of stakeholders is going to define that? And it depends, right? If I'm talking to a group of doctors, what is and what should be might be different than if I'm talking to people and they have a transportation issue, right? So I think that it's really important to have a group of people that are committed to the same goal and that they represent cross sectors of a population and they have a common agenda, that everybody understands what it is and why they're there to talk about things today. One of the biggest problems, I think, always with community engagement is we really need, well, that'll come up in my other question, but we need to strive to get people that we don't normally have at the table, right? So, you know, whatever you do for me, you do to me is a famous quote out of Bridges Out of Poverty. I think it's applicable here. If you're talking about the community and you're talking about social determinants of health and you're talking about the things that we want to bring up and address, right, the people that have those problems should be at least in this room. These are the stakeholders that we want, not just the people that affect change to them, but those people to speak for themselves.
Interesting. Linda, I have a kind of a follow-up question. And you, again, you both hinted at that you bring different people into the table, to the table when you're having these discussions. What happens when you bring different organizations to the table that may not have the same goals or may be in competition with each other?
So we in our region use an outside facilitator. They assemble a group called the Adirondack Rural Health Network. And prior to every year, they go around and do what they consider called a listening tour. So they go to a variety of stakeholders, and they ask everybody, what are your concerns? Where do you feel? And these are like clergy, school superintendents, a lot of people. Having that upfront information helps to identify problems prior to having them. So also, this listening tour engages the stakeholders. We put people at ease in the very beginning saying, these people are going to be at the table. How do you think that you can work together to solve this problem? I think one of the most important things is when we first convene any of the meetings, we talk about data. We talk about accurate data. And so it's not he or you or anything. This is data that represents this county or this region, depending on what it is. And who in this room can affect this data? This isn't about any one person. That's why we convened here today. It's concrete. It's often indisputable to present the need to a group. Convening by neutral stakeholders is important, right? Have a neutral party, somebody with no leg in the race. If you have a hospital that convenes it and there's two other hospitals in the group, there's also mistrust. So having a neutral convener, often that's a public health department. You know, I repeatedly say to somebody, I don't care which one of you do any of it. I want it to just get done. I want the healthiest county in New York State. So let's get together to do that.
Very good. Tom, you have thoughts?
I think one of the things that, you know, we try and go ahead and do is when we're looking at it, you know, in general, to take a step back or whatever else, is to, you know, what is it process-wise that you use? I think that's one of the things that would be interesting to kind of explore. I mean, most times, you know, use some kind of community organizational theory models, providing guidance in the process and the steps that one wants to consider. I know most of our health departments here within the state use the Mobilizing for Action through Planning and Partnership, the MAP process. So that, I think, kind of gives them the structure of going out there and trying to make sure that you're including all the different parties that need to be brought into the thing. And as was mentioned, I think a lot of those components as far as ensuring that you have neutral parties in there, you've incorporated all the different people within the community that are going to have an impact or should have some say on this, is really important. So a lot of those steps that were shared are very important as far as trying to make sure that you're incorporating everyone within the community. And I think you can also go ahead and when you're looking at the issues in a more broad context, you're trying to make sure that, okay, we know what the conflicts are potentially out there, and we've addressed those. So now we're trying to go ahead and say, what are the top major concerns, and how are we going to go ahead and address them? So, again, having some type of process in place, I think, is, you know, a major steps that, you know, really tend to have shown over the years to work with the community needs assessment development process.
Thank you. So I want to change gears a little and maybe take a step back and talk about what you think the community roles are in the community needs assessment process. Tom?
Yeah, the community roles, I guess one of the things that I always try and look at from a community perspective is to go out there and see which folks have the, you know, authority locally to be able to go ahead and try and address any issue. That basically have the legal responsibility, the community responsibility behind and going ahead and addressing something out there. The other is to, I think, looking at those folks out there in the community that are viewed as being the leaders for whatever the topic or concern that you're trying to address is, and ensuring that you have those folks involved and incorporated is very essential.
So, Tom, do you ever give your community partners specific tasks in these groups, like data analysis, collecting the data, things like that, or is it broader than that? You're the one that kind of brings all the data to the table, and they are just there to bounce the information off of.
Yeah, no, I think one of the biggest things that you probably go ahead and see is at the community level, again, trying to take things from the state perspective, going down to the community level, we're looking at working with the local community health departments out there, primarily as far as doing some type of needs assessment, prioritizations. It has to be something that takes place at the local level. That's really the biggest key. We can share things from a top-down level, but it's really whatever is perceived at the local level as being the major concern, topic, and issue. And that's what they're going to want to focus on. We can try and share and say, again, comparatively, are we in the top or bottom quartile in the state? Where are you at within the state? And then what is it that you want to prioritize? But there are quite a large you know, potential group of folks that can be involved in whatever the topic is. And those really need to be locally defined as far as who those partners are that are going to work together. And it's up to, I think, if we're coming at it from the state perspective, looking and working with them, is to try and ensure that we can share what have been successful activities that other communities have undertaken with those projects and try and bring that to the table and share that with them and see if those might work, if they are in similar situations, and or even kind of highlight and give them contacts, information from other sites that might have a very similar type of issue, concerns, and bring them together. I know, for instance, you know, we generally will go ahead and we have regional public health departments within our state, and so we will bring them all in together. And so getting them to know each other, know the different resources, how things work within a variety of different community types and sizes out there, and then using those resources. I think what was brought up earlier is going ahead, again, having neutral parties. Sometimes it's much more beneficial to have somebody else from outside your area come in and share it. But no matter what happens down at the local level, it has to be somebody who's respected. So if it's someone who they don't see as understanding their situation, being in a similar type of situation, those things all add to the local credibility for the site and making sure things can occur.
Thank you. Linda, thoughts?
Yeah, well, and so I will go from the bottom up. How about that? So obviously I'm in New York State. We have local health departments by county, but in upstate New York, one of the most rural areas and the most vast, I'm the second largest county in New York State with 21 people per square mile. And so we did take a regional approach right from the get-go. We organize our community health assessment really to help out our hospital partners in the sense that they couldn't answer to three different ones. So we try to organize ourselves to address all of the hospitals and the health center's concerns. I feel that I use the roles depending on the participant. How about that? I assess and I look at when I convene partners, and we do have a neutral person that does it, but we look to see who's your strengths and what's your weaknesses. I agree. Who's obligated to do some of this, right? One of the examples I use is we have a stakeholder that represents a large group of individuals with developmental disabilities. You're not going to find any of that data per se on what his shortages are in workforce, how he's not making his needs. That's a unique data set and sometimes really addresses, this is usually 100% of a Medicaid population, and this the data or that they can bring to the group addresses a disparity that we might want to tackle or certainly put in one of the prevention agenda items. So, what Tom said applies to us as well. The state comes down and they give us prevention agenda items. We choose from them, so we're not willy-nilly. We know we're going to have to get whatever our problem, whatever our data says to be to fit into one of these agenda items. And then underneath them, they're not written in stone, and certainly we've used some as guidance, and we've gone in different directions, but there's drop-downs with several opportunities, evidence-based programs, or best practices that other departments have done and had success in. So that's very helpful when you're trying to decide who's going to do what to affect change. And that's, again, what the whole community health needs assessment is about, right? Not just assessing what the need is, but then working with this cross-sector group of people to affect change in the next three-year cycle.
True. And what I like about the community engagement, and I've given this example before, is there community helps us interpret the data. You know, the example that I give is around Washington County had a fair years ago and had an E. coli outbreak. So if you follow their trend lines, you know, nothing, 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 and then it's a big spike and nothing, nothing, nothing. And, you know, as a data person, I look at the data and say, all right, so here's the data, but then the community can interpret the data and tell us what happened, and they did. So it helps us understand and interpret the data.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I want to change tracks a little and talk about the structure, which you guys talked about a little in bringing in a neutral party. So I'm really looking to try to understand how you develop the structure around the process in terms of leadership, meetings, how the meetings are run, things like that.
Yeah. As a region, we decided this was a better way to do it than individually. We realized we're, as a rural organization, as it, in the Adirondack Park, our communities have lots in common. They do have different things that aren't in common, and we address those individually. So we had a facilitator. If you're looking at the collective IMAC model, you would call that a backbone agency. So that agency structured the meetings from the beginning. But a group convened and said, let's meet at least quarterly. I'm looking right on my wall right now as a timeline taped to my wall. It started on 6/15 in 2018, and that's for this coming CHA. It's well-defined. We know when we're meeting and what we're going to do. So I would call that the large stakeholder meeting. So at these large stakeholder meetings, we convene, and the leadership is fluid. How about? The leadership in these meetings is fluid because the way it's designed for us is we have a bunch of work groups and subcommittees. So we have data groups. We have communities to group to do a survey. We might task about four different things. And amongst those, work groups will come leaders. So who's the leader in data collection or whatever? I'm going to say it's my girl, Jessica Darney Bueller. She loves data, and she's really great at it, and she chose to step up and say, you know what, I'm going to lead that work group. Usually the work groups are the people that actually do the work, the boots on the ground, and that's why they're effective, because they're the people in the field that can understand and interpret the things better than the 100-foot view. So, again, we structure the process around a stakeholder meeting, define work groups, define things, and then go out and let those work groups go do their jobs and then come back. We meet quarterly as a large group, and the smaller subgroups, the work groups, might meet sometimes 9 times, sometimes 2. It depends on what they are tasked with doing. Again, though, I would say the key to this is there's an outside neutral facilitator, and she organizes these call-ins for all the groups and keeps everybody on task.
Thank you. Tom?
Yeah, I was going to mention, I think on some of these things, we're talking about the structure and the process. Again, some of the things that we're doing is trying to go ahead and, you know, provide support for those folks locally as far as at the local health department there to come up with something. And I think the issue that probably comes up as frequently as anything else, you know, is always looking at the size of the groups that you're going to have for each of these activities. As she had mentioned earlier, you have sometimes a lot of local committees, groups already put in place. But if you don't or want to go ahead and make sure that why are some groups working, why aren't some groups working, a lot of times it ends up being, you know, you don't want the group to get too large. So, for instance, if you're having meetings, it may be something of where you could have a large stakeholder meeting group, and you may have a couple of dozen people there. But for the most part, you know, unless you're around a table or whatever else, and you're dealing with less, you know, until you get down to like a dozen or so in size, that's generally when you can go ahead and kind of get to the meat of whatever the issue is or the topic is. Anything larger than that, I think, is a really big challenge to make it, you know, something that's sustainable over time. So size, I think, of the groups that you're getting together, how frequently you get together, and things like that. Most people that are involved with these processes are volunteers. Some of them it might be, you know, related to their job or the task works that they have, but for the most part, it's pulling them away from what they're currently doing to attend some of these meetings around community needs assessment development, and that becomes a pretty big challenge, I guess, to try and ensure that you're getting the most that you can out of folks and not creating something as to where you just end up having lots of meetings and people get tired and bored with the meetings. I think what she was stating earlier as far as going ahead and stating that, you know, you really have a well-defined process in place, and you have your goals and needs, that objectives here that you're going to go ahead and be able to measure and say, okay, we've done this, so when do we know when we've met this goal and we can move on to the next?
Who's responsible for ensuring that the work gets done between the meetings? Tom, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, again, I think it's the leaders, and that's part of where you were talking about before is the leadership, but the people that are responsible for that is whoever takes charge and of whatever that group committee is, they're the ones that are kind of going to hold all these pieces and parts together. So in a lot of cases, it may end up being the individual that is at the meeting, what kind of support staff do they have or do they need support staff, and so can we provide that with them or to them to really help them with the process in getting something done. But whoever is in charge of that committee is the one that has the responsibility for it. I think one of the things that you mentioned before is really this leadership piece. So those that tend to show leadership are then going to have things, you know, function and operate really well and being able to accomplish and get things done on task. One of the things that's probably most challenging, I think, about a leadership position is to actually be able to allow all the parties that are at on the committee or group, whatever, there to be able to feel like they're able to openly share all their concerns and get a lot of their concerns addressed. So if you have good leadership, then you will go ahead and see that tasks are accomplished on time and people are willing to come back for them. So I guess the biggest answer as far as responsibility is, again, who's the authority, who's been given the authority to address that and is seen as having that authority to carry that out.
Thank you. Linda, thoughts?
Yeah. Well, so I don't know how it is in the rest. So I would say that it is, if we didn't convene as a region, if there wasn't, and many of my partners and my colleagues do not do what we do. They, you know, have big, huge counties and they do it themselves or whatever. But I think it's really important to really have a consistent facilitator. So when you get that email, you know whose name it is. I think we've identified that right in the very beginning, the New York State Public Health Department. It's one of their recommendations, right? So if we didn't convene through an outside source, which we do as a group, we, as a rule, would either be the local health department, I think, or potentially a hospital. We have, the way we're structured is we have a convener that is always the same. Courtney is the girl, right? She's going to send out the email. She's going to do that. She's going to facilitate the agenda that was agreed to by everybody. The agenda and all materials are set up to two co-chairs, one that represents hospital representation, one that represents health departments. They vet everything first, and then it's sent out. It keeps us all on task. And again, these meetings have been defined from now until the day that the CHA is due. So I think having a long-term vision and a plan from the very beginning sets expectations high, and it also gives people a clear path as to where we're going. I it's not on my wall for no reason, because I look at it and I say, okay, when is that due? Do I have any ask in that? You know, exactly from what I do, did I fulfill every obligation as a leader of this county to get that information to them? So the leadership is shared with work groups. They tackle objectives defined by the groups. The structure, again, is defined with an agenda that's agreed to. We also revisit the meeting minutes from the last one. We don't let anything go. I think, Tom, you touched on something that really was vital to me. It was actually under my number, list five things, which was give every stakeholder a voice. After I met with a few people prior to this meeting to say, you know, what would you say about it? And one of the things that came out is so many stakeholders would come to a meeting and never speak. So what are we doing to circle back and get them involved? And one of the things that happens in our group is people do circle back. If people are present and they didn't have, it's not that they didn't have an opportunity, because everybody does, but it's their probably their obligation maybe to speak up. But that doesn't always work for everybody's needs. So we often do even a roll call to say, hey, are you for or against this? Okay, so that works. And we go by consensus. That's how we vote. It's not a vote with a, you know, absolute or voting kind of thing. Whoever's in the group, that's the consensus of that group. But to get all the stakeholders engaged, they might use different things. So we might send an email out to this group later and say, how did you think this meeting went? Was there anything you wanted to share? We've had people leave the meeting which seemed upset. We circled back with those people and engaged them in later and said, what was it that upset you? You know what? Next meeting, can you get on the agenda? Let's talk about what your concerns were and bring the data and how you think it should move forward. Oftentimes, people are either resolved with, you know what, no, let me think about it, or, yeah, I'd like to do that, and it engages this group of people that, you know, potentially could sit at a stakeholder meeting, and they seem to be engaged, but unless you're participating, you're really not.
Well, I'd like to follow up with that if I could. Linda, I think, yeah, one of the things that you mentioned there that really sound good to me was the consensus component, trying to figure that out, because in reality, that's one of the things that I've had over the years of working out there, especially with rural communities. There's a long history. People wear a lot of different hats. And where are they? What's going on? And in reality, what I've kind of witnessed over time is there is this consensus component, and I find it different in rural areas versus urban areas. A lot of things in urban areas, it seems like they're willing to go ahead and bring up a topic issue and, you know, kind of bang it out and say, we'll get this resolved within 6 weeks, 6 months, and that's it. Whereas a lot of times in the rural areas, since the people are spread a little bit thinner, wear multiple hats, they don't tend to have as much time and resources to devote to it. So a topic or an issue that gets brought up, for it to be really considered, it may take a fair amount of time before something's really happened. But what really goes on is there is a consensus. And it's not something of where it is a strict 51% vote. Generally in communities, what I've noticed out there is that there's usually, you know, a 5 or 10% group of the population that generally is opposed to anything and everything that somebody is trying to, you know, do with them, for them, type of thing. So what we tend to see is that it takes a while. And a lot of times you keep repeating this, but it can be, you know, several years in the process of before something is truly decided upon. And it really comes down to it being, you know, hey, we really don't have any disagreement in the community. Again, if 90% of the people feel this is the thing we want to do, fine, we're going to do it. But generally, it's an investment of time and effort, and they're going to say, if we're going to do this, if we're going to make this change, i.e., you know, add another clinic, support the hospital, whatever it is that's pretty significant in their community, they're making this long-term investment. It isn't something, and that's why I think it takes them a while to reach the consensus level, because it may take, like I said, even a few years for people to agree on it, but once they agreed to it, they're planning on carrying this out for a lot of times over decades. So that's why it's sometimes challenging, I think, at times to get consensus around an issue that a community knows we're going to be known for this and we're going to stand behind it and make this decision and stick with it. Is that something you've observed as well or not?
I would agree in many other parts of the state, but I'm going to tell you, you could ask people all over New York State, for whatever reason, the Adirondack Park, the people up here, we are all of very like minds. I meet and talk with my fellow county public health directors like twice a month, easily. We convene, we talk, we have shared, and our hospitals aren't an adverse, you know, it's different here. They're all either owned by the same health network, even though they're in different communities. So I think it's been interesting for us in the sense that we can move great mountains in a very short period of time. I mean, when Esbjerg came out, I know the city still struggled to get, you know, half the people. And within probably the first 6 months, we had every doctor in an ER trained and certified in Esbjerg. You know, and people are like, wow, how did you do it? It's because we have the right stakeholders at the right table. But again, I'm speaking from just my window today. But I can speak to, I'm on the board of NYSHA, which is my organization, New York State Association of County Health Officials. And large counties, absolutely, they're going to take it. They want goals and they want those objectives met. These are huge partners with deep pockets, and they also know and recognize that in order to stay sustainable in value-based payment world and all of those things, they really need to get the prevention agenda items, all of those things help the health of a community, which reduce hospital readmissions and all the other things people are, you know, gauging and working towards. So I absolutely agree that there is a difference between rural and urban, and probably the partners behave differently between Westchester and Essex County.
And Linda, to your point, what I've noticed as I've gone around the state is that the community providers were engaged long before some of this stuff happened. before they brought the community needs assessment people together. And I think that's what has made it successful. As I look at other parts of the state, they're not engaged, they're not working together, and it's more difficult, finally, when an issue comes up, to work together. So I think that that cohesiveness that you see is built upon working together for a while on different projects.
Yeah, I agree, and that is what people say. We can't exist up here without partnerships.
Yeah.
We were so few doctors. There were so few providers here 15, 20 years ago that we all crossed counties. We couldn't depend. We have several. We have counties that don't even have a hospital in them. So they're all using each other's data to cross over. You know, in the event of a disaster, it goes a lot by population, right? We can send these supplies here, or we can send the supplies to a really rural area. We have, you know, fortified ourselves. We have mutual aid amongst ourselves. We had it years before the forced marriages of many other community health assessments. I have heard repeated stories of hospitals not working, or public health departments working in tandem, and that when this community health assessment came out, it was really a forced marriage. Now it's fabulous across, I think, most of the majority of New York State. I would say that probably did not happen here. Half of the nurses that work here probably moonlight in the hospital here. That's the cohesiveness that we have and that built bridges a long time ago. So, yeah, I think it's easier. It's an easier lift to some degree. But to Tom's point, we lack resources. And in an urban area, when they want to tackle a problem, they have people. Those people are resources to them, and they can say, hey, let's get this, and this, and these people here, and we're going to fix this. And there's the slow churn, because we don't have that.
Yeah, and I'd like to follow up, Robert. I think one of the things that you stated there is really that cohesiveness of working together, and as Linda alluded to as well. When you have something like that going, I think, you know, an observation is when you're going out and working with the community and on different topics, one of the things we were talking about before as far as the process on that is understanding and looking at the community. Sometimes it helps to actually have somebody from the outside kind of providing that view and perspective of what's really going on in the community. They may think that they're, divided over topics and issues in general, but when you start to look at issues that are out there, and you're starting to say, hey, you seem to be doing really well in this area, and we're having serious problems around the rest of the state, but your community doesn't seem to have this as an issue. Why is that? And I think that's really a big piece that can be brought to the table, is going ahead and focusing on what things, problems or issues don't you have in your community. And why is it that you don't have them? Why doesn't that problem exist? You go ahead and start looking at the community, and they can start to see, like you said, usually it's because they're working together, they've all identified this, and they kind of have an agreement and consensus on what to do. But generally it's something of where it's almost this habit that they have, and they really don't even think twice about it. So when you're then trying to come up with what can we do in your community, it's then turning around and saying, gee, what's been really successful? How have we been successful about doing that? And then trying to apply some of those approaches potentially to those concerns and issues, and seeing if you can't get that to kind of cross-pollinate and work across to then try and get folks as to where they are willing to work together. I think that's a big key. But the other part that you're kind of commenting is, if people aren't really familiar knowing each other and what's going on, then it's a much bigger challenge. Now, again, in most of our state where it's really rural, they tend to know each other really well. And sometimes that ends up being, you know, part of the concern and issues that we have. Like I said, it's really then coming back to it and saying, gee, you guys seem to be very successful in these areas. Why is that? And then get them to grasp and understand this is why you've been successful with it. Can you then apply those strategies to other problems or issues?
Agree.
Agreed. Well said.
Mm-hmm. Yep.